Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey everyone, another edition here of the Baseball America Podcast. JJ Cooper and Kyle Glazer today. We're not going to talk AL Central. We thought about doing that today, but as we wrap up, as we give you a podcast to head into the Thanksgiving break, the Thanksgiving holiday, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We all have the American Thanksgiving for our Canadian listeners and other countries, but we did want to talk today about the news that came out today. Ken Rosenthal had a story that, let's be honest, if you're a baseball fan, is not the kind of story that you want to read the day before Thanksgiving, which is that as we sit here with the current CBA set to expire at the end of November, and we don't have a new CBA yet, and for the first time, off the record, and you know, but there is a story that says that the owners are considering a lockout that would begin immediately. So that would mean that on December 1st, baseball will be locked out. It means that when we get to the winter meetings, which is not far away,
starts December 4th,
right? Three days later, when the winter meetings arrive, that doesn't mean there would be the winter meetings. The winter meetings are the major league and minor league winter meetings. Doesn't mean that the owners can't still meet about travel and other things that they need to work out. Doesn't mean that the minor leagues can't do all the things they do with setting schedules and doing meetings. They could even do meetings with major league teams about any minor to majors issues that they need to work out. You can still have the trade show, all that. But what you wouldn't have is this free agent signing here, this trade's happening. And I do mean... Truly, trust me, this hurts me to say this, but no Rule 5 draft at the winter meetings.
JJ would sit in his hotel room with just the lights
weeping,
out.
Weeping.
So sad.
Weeping. But, so we saw that story. You read that story, I read that story. And I guess I'll start with Kyle. Let's preface to say, this is a very busy time of the year at Baseball America. We've got the Prospect Handbook coming up. We just finished the Almanac. We just finished an issue. We got another issue coming up as well. We have less than a month from now where we will have literally written and edited 900 scouting reports for the Prospect Handbook. There's no one in the Baseball America offices whose job is to spend time trying to figure out where they are in the negotiations of the CBA. So we are not coming to you and saying that here's what a lot of reporting we've done said. But that being said, Kyle, knowing this as you do, what do you think, when you saw that story, what do you think the chances are that effectively a week from now, we will see a lockout in baseball?
To be honest, it struck me as a lot of saber rattling. I don't think we're going to see anything, and if we do, it won't be anything serious. And the reason I say that is what's being discussed as the points of contention are not the huge issues. You know, share of revenues going to players, you know, issues with potential, collusion. I mean, some of the really nasty stuff that we've seen over the years, not just in baseball, but even what the main topics of contention were in the recent lockouts with the NBA and the NHL and what the NFL was threatening but never actually did, were way more serious, way more big picture issues. What the issues they're talking about now are details. I mean, obviously it seems callous to say that because we're talking about players' lives, but in the grand scheme of Major League Baseball as a multi-billion dollar corporation.
$8 to $9 billion industry right now.
And how it functions, these are not the core issues that strike at the very heart of the game, such as, you know, again.
The share of the pie. I mean, really,
right. The
baseball has obviously had labor strife before. They've had lockouts. They've had strikes. Those have revolved around. Really, what happened is once the free agent genie was out of the bottle, owners spent the next, part of the next decade at least, trying to tamp that down and failed. But there, so in 80, you know, in the early 80s, and we, you know, we had multiple run-ins with this, in the 80s and even into the 90s, we had that the debate was essentially over free agency and players, major league
From
players making
clause all the way up through free agency and how they're going to be compensated. And then you obviously had, we mentioned the collusion cases, the late
right,
I mean,
which
these were very serious, you know.
Those were share of the pie issues. Those were What percentage of this at the time, much less, much smaller pie, what percentage goes to the players? What percentage goes to the owners?
Which at the end of the day is the core issue for all sports leagues. I mean, we all learn the terms basketball-related income over and over and over again during the most recent NBA lockout, same with NHL. I mean, so to me, when that's not an issue on the table, the other stuff can get worked out. And another thing is, you know, we mentioned having not, I'm not on the phone with, Major League Baseball talking to anonymous sources, but, you know, I was in the room when they were talking about at the All-Star game, and I was in the room when they were talking about the general manager's meetings. And just the tone is not this animosity, this, well, you know, we think there's, you know, the reading between the lines isn't terrible. It's, you know what, we have some issues, we'll work them out. It's not, well, we have, you know, X and Y, and this is a very serious problem, and they're not meeting us halfway.
No, there was, I mean, you go back to the late 80s. You go back to the end of the Uberoff era when there was overt collusion. When there was, I mean, if you're too young to remember this, when there was times where you could be one of the best free agents in baseball and literally get zero offers besides
Dawson.
When calling the bluff is that you actually show up, place an empty contract in front of the team and say,
fill it out
and I'll sign it. And they're like, I don't know about this. Well, there was overt collusion. You had owners who hated the players. You had the players who understandably felt like that the owners were not trustworthy. And you had a literal at the time, I mean, it was a Cold War. Right now, you do have a situation where, as you said, all these things we're talking about. I cannot imagine in any way that we will see on April 1st or whatever day it is, well, baseball is locked out today because they can't work out whether they're going to have an international draft or not. That's not an issue
that the entire union is going to vote to strike over.
And that's also not an issue that the owners are going to
lose hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue
to get an international draft. Because as issues go, it's not that it's not significant, but it's not a core issue.
In the grand scheme, exactly. So to me, while I think, you know, pay attention to it, see what happens, I think it, again, it just strikes me as the classic saber rattling we see as negotiations get closer, whether, you know, I remember even hearing over and over again how the NFL was going to lock out. They had the poison pills in that labor contract and they weren't going to renew it, and the owners, the players, it was getting nasty. And all ended up happening was, I think, a week of training camp.
And let me say on that one, I mean, you want to talk about basically owners who are going over the line. Do remember, I mean, this is something we do not have. There should be animosity between the Players Association and the owners in football, because the poison pill is that there was going to be an uncapped year in football. They have a salary cap, but for the year to help in, there was going to be things that free agency, the restrictions on when you become a free agent were going to go up. That was the poison pill for the players. But on the owner's side, it was there will not be a salary cap. And then after that,
they find the teams
who went over the non-existent salary cap.
Which was hysterical, but very
That is the NFL's version of the MLB's collusion from the late 80s. It's just happened a lot more recently.
And again, that's the thing. I think for a lot of people, you know, the MLB situations, we're talking about 1994, which seems so long ago, but, you know, you take someone like me, for example, who I was 6 years old when that happened. I have no memory of it, and now I'm 28. So you have a lot of people who are young professionals who are part of the market of ticket buyers, television people who
thankfully have grown up in a time where this was never.
So I think for a lot of this, there's a little bit of a, you know, there's not really a sense this is going to happen, especially when the lockouts that we're familiar with are the NBA and NHL, which are two much smaller revenue sports that had very serious disagreements over, again, that core issue, the share of the pie, hockey-related income, basketball-related income. I mean, even MLB, I remember in 2002 when they got close.
Oh, I just started. I literally, when you said that, that made me think of my story that I think of is that I had just started at Baseball America in September of 2002. And, I mean, I still say, this is, I had gotten my dream job. This is where I wanted to be. I was thrilled. That being said, I moved from Georgia to North Carolina, and I mean, that's one where we really, we were coming out of an era where usually when it came to a new CBA, there ended up being work stoppages, lockouts, strikes, whatever. And we also knew, like, I wasn't dumb enough not to know. I mean, Baseball America took a hit in 95, understandably, because you had people who were serious baseball fans who stopped being interested. And some of them never came back. And that's the thing that you do. That's the thing, again, that strikes me about how we're not going to have a lockout is the dumbest thing that everyone, I mean, the stupidest thing that everyone involved could do right now. At a time where we are coming off of a postseason that has baseball at its strongest point in many a year, the worst thing in the world to do would be to cause unneeded damage to the game.
Exactly. And the truth is, I think the owners get that, the Players Association gets that, and this is going to sound overly simplistic, but baseball's owners are not stupid. Occasionally there's greed, but they're not stupid, as opposed to, you know, another sport I'm a fan of, the NHL. A lot of the people in charge there genuinely do not make smart decisions. They repeatedly, over the years, whether it's the league office, the ownership, I'm less worried about someone involved in Major League Baseball doing something that's just a poor business decision based on the track record of the last 20, I mean, we're talking about, it's been 20 years since a strike. It's not like there's been repeated, you know, it's not where
we haven't been at the brink either. 2002 is the last time we came to the brink.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to dive in a little bit further also with this. Ken Rosenthal's reporting points out that there is general agreement on many of the issues. The core issues that are standing there is that, according to Ken, the owners offered to remove draft pick compensation for free agents. So basically remove that tie between the US/Canada/Puerto Rican draft and free agent compensation. Now, what was not clear from that, at least in my reading, was whether that would mean that free agent compensation would disappear, or if you essentially would cut the tie between the team that signs the player losing a pick, which I think is probably what it is, because I don't see the owners in any way wanting to, and they have no reason to give up. If there is no penalty to the team signing the player, that's where the Players Association logically gets involved, because that is affecting the market for the player. If the player signing with another team causes no penalty to the team that signs them, then it really almost becomes like, if the owners want the draft, which is not union players, if they want to give extra picks in the draft, that's their call, not really a Players Association issue. But said that, and then that they were looking for that, and they would give that up in exchange for an international draft. And I give the players, this is something where the players are looking bigger picture, which is something they've been accused in the past of not. In the past, the Players Association has been accused of, it works for the stars much less than it does for the rank and file. In this case, the Players Association is saying that free agent compensation affects 10, 12, 15 players a year, whereas the international draft would affect
hundreds
of players a year. And they rightfully point out there is a very strong reason that there is not a clear parallel between a 18-year-old U.S. high school student being drafted and a 16, or let's make him an 18-year-old Dominican player being drafted. The big difference being
leverage to go to college or not.
If you're a high school player and you get drafted, you say, my number's 300,000, take whatever it is. My number's 300,000, and if not, I'm going to X. And the team knows, we can lose them to wherever. You do this in an international draft. I'm not saying all teams would do it, but if a team wanted to treat most of the international draftees like they were college seniors, which is the non-leveraged portion of the current draft, there's not a whole lot precluding them from doing that, because what you're essentially saying to those players is okay, you're 18 now. If you don't sign for, let's say I give you a $10,000 offer, you can go back in the draft for next year, but you'll be a 19-year-old at that point, and you won't really have done much to you're not going to increase your stock the same way that you do if you head off to a JUCO or to a major college program.
Right.
And there's ways you can work around that, but that is that's impressive. In some ways, I can say that's impressive that the Players Association is looking out for people who are not union members, not just the cream of the crop of the union.
And I think it's interesting, too, we talk about, Rosenthal pointed out in his article that it was 27.5% of all players on opening day rosters were international players. And I thought it was interesting because you're still talking about over 70% not being them. So mm-hmm. You could still say the 72% of the non-international players who have no ties to this and could not care about this could overrule and say, hey, this is not an issue we're willing to go to battle over. But I think it's been good. There's a lot of discussion happening. Players are listening to each other, just kind of seeing, an understanding, even if they might not agree with certain points or counterpoints, they're at least keeping an ear open to their teammates who might be from the Dominican, who have a very different tale to tell or a different perspective. And I think anytime you have a union membership that listens to each other, it's better than having one where you're divided in half.
Well, the interesting thing with this, though, is that if this is the core issue, there are ways. I do think this is something that can be resolved.
I agree.
Again,
100%.
Because let's say that the owners really want an international draft. There are protections you can put into that eliminate some of those concerns. Like if you talk about the lack of leverage, a way you put into that is that you put in hard floor slotting. Like basically, if you take a guy with the 25th pick,
you
have to offer him this, and if you do not, he becomes a free agent, signed by anyone, or whatever. We essentially have that in the major league, in the current draft, in that if you do not, we saw the loophole free agents that happened years ago now with Travis Lee and guys like that, where if you didn't offer a contract, a proper contract within a certain amount of time, that player became a free agent. So there are ways you can work around that. If it's something on the flip side, if it's something where MLB wants some more cost certainty in this and they want to eliminate the current system where teams are really incentivized to go over their pool and spend way more than their pool, well, there's other ways you can do that too. If you go to baseballamerica.com right now, Ben Badler has a story yesterday that pointed out one theory, but it's like his point was if you raise the amount of money that each team's allowed to spend and keep the same penalties as far as if you go over your pool, you actually decrease the incentive to go over your pool. The idea being, if the Yankees know that they're only going to be allowed to spend $8 million in a 3-year span, then and they could spend 25 in 1 year instead or 20, well, they know even if they pay the penalty, they're going to spend 21 year. And the penalty, they'll still spend more money and acquire more talent than if they had $8 million to spend.
Right.
If each team had 12 a year, and you said, I know I'm going to be able to spend $36 million over 3 years, well, then all of a sudden, the penalty for going over in 1 year means you have to spend $50 million in a year to make it worth it. Well, teams probably don't want to do that.
I think, circling back, though, all these things we're talking about, you mentioned, they're fixable. Mm-hmm. There's not these sometimes intractable.
We're not talking about that owners want a salary cap and the players don't.
Right. And so for me, that's why, again, of course, as we're getting down to the deadline, people are going to start getting nervous and, someone's going to, try and play a little chess and maybe, say, hey, we're willing to go to battle over this. But, I just go back to saber rattling, to posturing. This is not the type of deal where I really think you could sit here and say, yeah, I can see them losing games over this. There are situations where you absolutely can. I was not surprised the NHL or NBA went to their lockouts. I was frankly surprised the NFL didn't lose any games because all the things they were talking about were core issues. And
right.
To their credit, they found a way to solve them.
No, it's not even, I would even argue it's not to their credit. What it just proved again is the NFL Players Association, because the NFL Players Association is forever at a very weak position because the careers are so short. So any player who's not a star, if you lose a half season of games, it's going to be hard for you to make those checks up. Because if you're only in the league for 2.5 years, I don't care how good you make it for next guy. And the other problem that they have that MLB will that the Players Association of Baseball will never have is that the difference you can in NFL, they've proven it, you can put out, it's a poor product, but you can put out games, replacement games, that the difference between the 45th best player on an NFL roster and the 60th, who's currently not a roster player, is very small. Now, it doesn't mean you do lose the stars, but there's not, you can put out a relatively representative product. And that's something the Players Association doesn't really have an answer for. Whereas, and because once you do that, what happens is the NFL players, because they have short careers, start crossing the picket line. And once you have a Lawrence Taylor show up, 87, once a Lawrence Taylor shows up, guys like that start showing up, the strike's over. In MLB, because you have not just the 40-man roster players, but if you're a top prospect who's not on the 40-man roster,
you're not going to risk it.
You're not going to cross that picket line.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that, and the one time they tried, it was not going to go well. You are talking about essentially low-level minor leaguers who are really put in an impossible situation and indie ball players, essentially. That's the caliber of player you're talking about. Well, that is not nearly as significant a threat, you know, when there are more key issues than there are
so
this time.
So it just goes back to, again, I think we're all hitting on the same point here. There's no real way it makes any sense for this to really get beyond maybe a day or two. I mean,
this seems like it makes more sense that if they're not done by December 1st, you say, okay, we're just going to keep operating under current rules while we finalize these last couple of issues.
Right.
Because, again, now you have to have this worked out, but the reality of it is that you have, I mean, this is the point of year where you have time.
Right. You still have spring training, you know, players aren't reporting for another 3 months. You can get stuff done. And, you know, and obviously there's going to be variations of labor law and things that have to do, you know, go about things certain ways, but, again, I just, you know, and then, this is not a criticism of the reporting that was done. Like,
no.
You have to report it, and I think it's very relevant.
We're talking about it right now because it moved the story.
I think these comments are more directed to the people who are saying the things like, what, well, you know, we could, you know,
the reality is
threatening a lockout.
It's predictable.
Right.
It's predictable that this is the point of time. It
now
has not
the
happened.
Final week, like, of course you're gonna. You're always gonna see these types of stories.
But at the same time, I still
these types of quotes, I should say, from these types of people.
I still feel at this moment pretty comfortable that the Rule 5 draft will happen on December 8th at 9 a.m. Eastern, and I will be there. I will be a very sad man if that does not happen, but that is something that I still do believe will happen. So, that's our podcast for today. That's going to be the last one of the week. You know, we are trying to do these daily during the week, but at the same time, you might have noticed that tomorrow's Thanksgiving. We're not coming in here to record a podcast tomorrow, and we're not coming in on Friday to record a podcast. So we will be back next week. We still have we're going to knock out Twins, Indians, and Tigers podcast next week. And then we'll roll right into the AL West, something that Kyle and I both know. Kyle wrote the Mariners top 10. I wrote the Astros top 10. We're rolling along.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to getting into the western half of the U.S. with baseball. That's my bread and butter, and I'm ready to get in it.
So, for Kyle Glazer, this is J.J. Cooper. Thank you, everyone, for the download. A reminder that it is a great time to subscribe to Baseball America because it is prospect season, baseballamerica.com/store. All kind of offers for the print magazine, the online magazine, the online coverage, as well as the print. You can get both together. Also, we have the Prospect Handbook. We just finished up the Almanac. So a lot of great stuff, baseballamerica.com/store. If you need holiday presents right now, great idea for everyone, really. But also with that, we do want to remind you, if you are downloading Baseball America Podcast, do you enjoy it? Feel free to write a review. iTunes, you know, if you do iTunes, give us a rating and a review. We do appreciate it. And we will be back next week. So long, everybody.
Bye.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.